On this episode of What's What, Timothy Leary, Ram Dass, and a friendship that sparked a cultural revolution.
Hello and welcome to What's What. I'm Chris Syracuse.
And I'm Rushi Krishna.
What's up, Rushi?
Hi. It's been a while.
It's been a long, long, long while. Thank you for pushing us. Thank you for also helping make this rebrand happen. So I'll be posting another like little transition clip before this episode. But if you haven't heard that, what's that?
The trees.
The trees.
Yeah.
I guess we're just going with the natural sound. So mm-hmm. Cool. So yeah, if you haven't heard that transition clip or transition little thing that I'm going to post later, we are changing the Greener Us podcast to the What's What podcast. So this podcast will no longer be Greener Us. It'll be exclusively What's What. So the pressure's on. So if you like What's What, you'll continue to like it. We'll still do Vice Radio. No more Greener Us, no more The Blend. People don't like the environmental news. They like hearing Rushi talk about psychedelics. So that's what we're here to talk about today.
That is what we're here to talk about
today. Psychedelics, specifically Timothy Leary, Ram Dass, a.k.a. Richard Alpert.
And they're a very interesting story.
Very, very interesting story.
We've actually had this episode planned for a very long time. I think life just kind of got ahead of us a little bit.
It did.
But I'm also very excited to bring back What's What after a hiatus. But if anyone was worried, we're still friends. Everything's still good. We just took a creative break.
Yes.
And yeah, it was funny because that show, How to Change Your Mind, came out during our hiatus, which if anyone hasn't seen, it's a Netflix show made by Michael Pollan, where they also kind of talk about psychedelics and their therapeutic benefits and a lot about the history of it. So I think a lot of our episode is going to cover some of the stuff that he covers, but I'm happy that it's coming up to mainstream, you know, like that Netflix has put out a show now, which is also chronicling this kind of movement that happened and is still happening. And I think what's going on in the States now, they've got a legalized nature and they're kind of working towards legalizing psilocybin research.
It is. There's a lot going on and it feels
like really relevant this episode.
It does feel very relevant. And I think it's important that we give people like the history and where this stuff really came from. If you talk specifically about the use of psychedelics in therapy and for, you know, psychological disorders. So that's why we're talking about Ram Dass and Timothy Leary. So let's set the stage for people. So Doors of Perception, I'm going to let you take that part, Rush, because you know more about Huxley, because it really started with Huxley and his book, Doors of Perception. So why don't you take it? Tell people.
Cool. So Doors of Perception was released in 1954. It's a novel autobiographical novel by Aldous Huxley.
It's autobiographical.
Well, it's his experience on mescaline. Mm. So that's what the book is. It's not very long. He describes his experience taking mescaline. How he gets his hands on it is through a psychologist called Humphrey Osmond, who's based in like the Saskatchewan province or something. And Huxley writes to him. He's kind of heard about mescaline going around in different circles, like among some of the famous beats. Like,
and this is the early 50s. So a few years before he wrote Doors of Perception.
No, he wrote Doors of Perception in 1954.
Yeah, so this is so what you're describing here is before a few years before that.
Just like a year before.
A year before that.
A year before, okay. Yeah. He took his first experience was in 1953, and then the book was published in 1954.
Got it.
It's like a kind of short 100-page sort of book.
I see.
But when it came out, it was really influential among a lot of creatives and a lot of that kind of early counterculture movement, the beatniks and those authors like Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg had taken mescaline. So I guess Huxley just felt like, oh, this is something I should try. And the book itself is like not particularly riveting. It's kind of just him describing what's changing in his sight, what's changing in his feelings, what's changing in his emotions and the way he's processing things while he's on this drug. Yeah, basically this book had a huge influence on people in the early psychonauts.
So kind of setting the stage for the Cultural Revolution and the psychedelic revolution that's happening, that's going to happen in the 1960s.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess maybe we can just talk a little bit about the history of LSD as well.
Yeah, so I think that's an important thing to talk about. So if people don't know, I actually just learned this not too long ago, that it's actually a fungus. It's derived from a fungus that grows on a rye plant called ergot, which if you watch the Netflix series, How to Change Your Mind, they talk about this. But yeah, go ahead, take it.
So LSD was synthesized in Switzerland by a doctor named Albert Hofmann, who is now like a legend among that community.
Yeah, his famous bicycle ride after he accidentally
exactly. So he kind of had it on his fingers and was exposed to it, obviously in a pretty high concentration, and had a really exciting, like trippy bike ride home, but kind of like didn't really think much about it. They were researching a drug like completely different, like how to, I think it was a drug for morning sickness that they were trying to find. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just playing around with compounds. And I think after his first experience, he kind of just put it under the table. And it wasn't until kind of the 60s that this drug kind of came back and people started saying, hey, how can we do some research on this? At this point, the company was called Sandoz, still based in Switzerland. It was the company that Albert Hofmann was working for, but they basically put it out there as a drug, asking research scientists to start testing it and seeing if it had any benefits or any psychological effects or any of that stuff. So that kind of brings us into Timothy Leary and what was going on at Harvard.
Yes.
So these guys, maybe you want to take over here.
Yeah, I mean, this part to me is so fascinating, to think that so much of what happened in the 1960s, as far as the hippie movement, the counterculture revolution, you could trace so much of it back to the early 1960s with these two professors, Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, who would later become Ram Dass, and their work with the Harvard psilocybin project. So they were using psilocybin to, like you said, test it for its potential therapeutic benefits. Leary had a mushroom experience in Mexico a couple of years before, I think in 1960. And he became so just enthralled with what it did to his mind. And I think he's quoted as saying that he learned more about the human mind and about psychology in those 5 hours when he was on that mushroom trip in Mexico than he did for 15 years previous to that studying psychology.
So it's worth saying that both of these scientists were pretty reputable. You're not granted permission to do these kind of experiments without like a pretty good background of where you came from. So it's worth noting that Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, I think they were both like in their 40s while they were at Harvard. So you need to bear in mind, these guys aren't like young teenagers just like dabbling around with
acid. No, they're professors.
These are professors. Yeah. And
tenured. I think Alpert was on track to be tenured. Mm-hmm. I don't think Leary was, but they were still, very, like you said, reputable people.
Mm-hmm. So they were researching, and I think they were researching with a bunch of graduate students, you know, dosing out, seeing how you were affected. I think this is also where they came up with the terms like set and setting. Mm-hmm. It was during this period at Harvard. Set that you're in, so your environment, and your setting, which is also like your mental state. It's like the two of those, as long as those are being kind of monitored or those are managed, it kind of determines whether you're going to have a good trip or a bad trip, you know? And a lot of the things that they learned during their research there are still used in the research that's kind of started to go on again today. That show, How to Change Your Mind, covers a lot of like the modern day research going on about psychedelics, including MDMA and how it's helped use to treat PTSD, and how a lot of these drugs are used to treat trauma because they're such kind of confronting substances that like lay things in front of you so clearly that it maybe makes you see things in a different way, change your perspective about it, see the truth behind it or the deeper meaning behind what's going on in your life. And I think they were starting to really hit on something there and realize, you know, this was 60 years ago, that these substances can be beneficial. And Well, it's that's amazing that 60 years later they're coming back and people are learning the same thing that these scientists were figuring out in the 60s.
That's exactly it. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's why we're talking about the two of them, mm-hmm. specifically in this context, because they were so important to not just the use of psychedelics, but just the whole questioning of what it means to be in a society and like why we believe the things we believe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just such a major theme, probably the core theme of the show, that we can't not talk about them because they were so, so impactful. And to think that when most people hear the name Timothy Leary, they think LSD. Most people probably don't even know that he was a Harvard professor and that a lot of this stuff started with very legitimate, very, like you said, reputable scientific medical research.
Honest medical research.
And Leary himself knew how powerful these were. And he actually, a lot of people don't know this, he actually advocated for their controlled use. A lot of people think, oh, Timothy Leary just wanted everybody to do acid and just trip out all the time. You know, his famous, what, turn on, tune in, drop out, right? Yeah. Is that his thing? I always get it confused. Yeah, turn on, tune in, drop out. And he actually said that during a congressional hearing. I think it was like in the late 50s. And of course, that scared the shit out of the establishment, because mm-hmm. they hear something like that and they think, well, this is going to completely fuck it up for us. You know, we can't have a lot of people walking around questioning authority, thinking for themselves, you know, mm-hmm. thinking that they have the power to do all these things. We need them dependent on these systems and in the institutions. Mm-hmm. So, but in many ways, Leary especially, and Ram Dass to a certain degree, but Leary especially was kind of caught in between, you know, this revolutionary idea that he had, but also recognizing that it needed to be controlled. So anyway, so let's get back to...
So also going on at this time were...
But before that, though, you want to talk about MKUltra.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about how they were fired from Harvard in 63. You want to talk about MKUltra first.
Well, now we've already spilled the beans. Let's talk about how they were fired from Harvard in 1963.
Well, so it was... The story goes that Ram Dass, Richard Alpert at the time, gave it to... somebody he shouldn't give it to, the psilocybin. He gave it to an undergraduate outside of
So I think the terms of their research was that it could only be given to graduate students. Mm-hmm. That was a very important term as part of the research they were doing. Later on, in part of like the Harvard newspaper, an article comes out about somebody who basically had a trip. The author of that article was an undergrad. So then questions came up as to how they got their hands on it. And obviously the terms of their research were broken because it was clear that an undergrad had taken it, not only taken it and written about it as well. So I think that was the reason, was it not?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but supposedly, and this is, they talk about this in the documentary Dying to Know, that it may have been an undergraduate student that Alpert was attracted to, and it was outside of the experimental setting.
Right.
So what, but that's neither here nor there, but all that to say, they were fired from Harvard in 1963, both Leary and Alpert. And that kind of set into motion a lot of the things that were going to happen around psychedelics over the course of the rest of the 60s and into the 70s and up until today. But you had mentioned the MK Ultra experiments that were going on kind of at the same time, right? They were going on from 1963 to 1970.
No, 1953 to 1964. So this is like kind of start of the Cold War era. So these new substances, these psychoactive substances like mescaline, MDMA, LSD are now kind of been discovered, the early days. And obviously the CIA and the military are their first ones to get their hands on it and start seeing, you know, how can they use this for their military benefit? Can these drugs be used for mind control? Can they be used for, being able to like brainwashing? Mm-hmm. Can they be used as truth serums? Mm-hmm. Like these were the things they're trying to find out. And it's quite well documented now because people who were part of the experiments have kind of spoken up.
People that were experimented on, that were given LSD and other psychedelic drugs.
Yeah, but a lot of the time during the MK Ultra experiments, they were given them without like consent or like without them knowing what was going to happen.
They would just dose them.
They would just dose people and kind of just observe and monitor and not really explain anything. some notable kind of people who were part of these experiments. There's one scientist called Frank Olson who basically a few days after, or like the day after taking the possible dose of LSD, then committed suicide. And it was very like, it was under really weird circumstances and the family sort of didn't let it go. Hmm. And later on, just a couple of years ago, basically the CIA settled the court case with them and gave them some money, you know.
Wow.
Other ones are like Ken Kesey, the author of One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. The other one we said was Ted Kaczynski.
The Unabomber was, mm-hmm. I think he was an undergraduate or a graduate student at Harvard at the time and participated in these experiments.
But I mean, but the difference is, you know, you're giving them to people in uncontrolled environments, which then, you know, could lead to mental health issues. It could lead to this, like, if you're not doing them in the right set and setting, yeah, they can be dangerous and people can, you know, lose their minds and people can, you know, have horrible experiences. But I think what Leary was so passionate and clear about was that these things can be super therapeutic if they're used in the right way.
Yeah. And as we're talking about this, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but it is so interesting because, yeah, you're right. If you're doing it in an environment where it's not controlled or it doesn't have the best interest of the person who's using it in mind, then mm-hmm. of course things can go wrong. And it seems like too much of a coincidence that 1963, the year that John F. Kennedy is assassinated, is the same year that all of these things are getting a lot of attention. It's during the same time that the MK Ultra experiments are going on. And the two most prominent people that are working on this, Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, are fired from one of the most elite universities in the world that's doing this research, mm-hmm. for doing it in this safe way for the sake of helping people. Yet the CIA continues to do it in a way that in one case makes somebody commit suicide. In other cases, maybe contributed to Ted Kaczynski and all of his mental problems that led him to do what he did. And it's just fascinating. And it doesn't seem like a conspiracy theory to me to suggest that this was all part of a larger push from the establishment, specifically elements in the American government that said, this is dangerous stuff. I mean, Richard Nixon himself called Timothy Leary later on in the late 60s, early 70s, the most dangerous man in America. He was arrested something like 36 times for his beliefs. I mean, really what he was saying, because they really viewed him as a threat. So anyway, all that to say, it's really interesting to like take a step back and look at all these things together and how much overlap there is and how it's really part of the same story, right? You had a counterculture force that was really trying to expand consciousness, break free of a lot of these things. And you had the prevailing established power that said, nope, like mm-hmm. we're gonna shut this shit down.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
So after
there you go. You're good.
So after they got fired from Harvard.
Yeah.
What are those guys? Those guys were not done. They weren't done with their research. They went on and founded Millbrook, right?
Right. Well, they were given, it was the Hitchcock Estate in Millbrook, New York. And it was a wealthy family.
Like a beautiful mansion the countryside in upstate New York.
Right.
And they were kind of permitted to do their research there. I mean, they were still two doctors, you know, so they could do independent research. I think something I want to kind of touch on is a little bit about the preface of Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. So I haven't actually read the book, but I have read the preface.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has not seen it, it's like a really beautiful book that's worth looking up. It's a lot of like illustrations, and it was one of the kind of main counterculture spiritual books that Ram Dass wrote and illustrated during his time in India.
And we should say now that Ram Dass is Richard Alpert. Richard Alpert.
Oh, we didn't say that yet.
Well, so, I think that's
what we're going to touch on now is what exactly are these guys researching?
And what happened after they were fired and that?
They started off as psychologists. So kind of questioning human psyche, kind of understanding what makes us us, what makes humans humans, what makes us think differently, you know, what makes us have different perspectives. That's like the kind of main purpose of a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
Later they went into psychedelics, you know, maybe saying that this is where I find the answers. you know, these mind consciousness expanding drugs, these experiences I'm able to share with different people, these changed viewpoints, this therapeutic setting, maybe this is where I find the answers, you know. But then what happens after the kind of period of Harvard is that Ram Dass, or Richard Alpert, goes to India. And this is where he starts to discover Eastern philosophy and spirituality. Mm-hmm. And he finds himself a guru in the mountains of India and learns from them. And he says, this is where I learn, you know, the most during meditation. This is where I start to understand who we are in the best sense. I think psychedelics in a lot of sense are kind of, they explain it as it's sort of like wide open. There's no reins. It's free rein of how your mind's going to go, and it can be good and it can be bad and it can be scary, you know. And at the end of the whole thing, you're kind of just like, whoa, like what just happened? You feel like, oh, I just saw the whole unitedness of nature. But then you can just snap back into your regular life, like pretty much the next day, and kind of forget about it. Whereas spirituality, I think what Richard Alpert, who then becomes Ram Dass, learns is like, this is a way to really integrate this knowledge into your normal life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that kind of, these guys are on this constant search. Well, I think Leary's kind of goes off on a tangent on like, he really just wants to create this revolution. Like he knows he already has all the answers. And now he's like, everyone should do this. But later on in his career, you know, he tries to run for governor.
Yeah, he
like
runs
he's really determined
Reagan
to make
in 1969 this, in California.
Really determined to make this change, but maybe the way he goes about it is too much in the psychedelic realm of like a uncontrolled explosive way, you know, which is going to get shut down, you know, Ram Dass continues to find his answers in a far more sustainable manner through spirituality. So
really, really good point. And what's so fascinating about their friendship, because mm-hmm. it's very clear that contrast that you're describing. And, you know, in that documentary, the one narrated by Robert Redford, Dying to Know, it's really beautiful. And I definitely highly recommend you watching it because it's all about their friendship. But you can see over the years, from the late 50s all the way up until Timothy O'Leary's death, I think in late 90s, mm-hmm. you know, they went through so much together, and they lived and were such a crucial part of something that really shaped modern culture in a very, very big way. And to see both sides of that, mm-hmm. you know, the rebellious side of it, the aggressive, like really pushing back against the system side of it. And then, like you said, the very measured, mm-hmm. deeply like introspective, spiritual, for lack of a better term, way that Ram Dass went about it. And to see them come back together at the end of their lives in this documentary.
Super cute. They're both
so
like
beautiful.
In their 70s.
Yeah, at
like
least.
Two old
yeah.
dudes yep. just kind of catching up and reminiscing
up. Yeah, yeah.
about their really ridiculous lives.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's crazy. Crazy that they were. Yeah, I can't even imagine mm-hmm. like living through something like that. Anyway, so thank you for bringing that up, because that's a really important part of the story. So we should say that we're going to do two parts of this episode, because another thing that we're doing here is we're going to do half hour about episodes. Yeah, we're not going to restrict it. Yeah, mm-hmm. half hour, 40 minutes. But part one, kind of want to lay the groundwork. And then part two, we'll talk more about their legacy. Do we need to talk about anything else?
I mean, we might just want to close up with like what happens next. So he's been fired, and then the kind of government goes on a rampage. We're going to elaborate on this a lot more in our next, and the kind of effects of this in our next part. Mm-hmm. But I think it's worth saying that basically Timothy Leary gets named the most dangerous man in America for what he's doing and the revolution that he's trying to cause.
So, I think you're right. I think that maybe is a good place to leave it. We're at like 25 minutes now, mm-hmm. and we do want to make these kind of a little bit more manageable for people that don't want to listen to a whole hour. Do we want to leave them with a quote from Leary where he's talking about LSD? Or I think we have a soundbite.
Yeah.
You want to play that for him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is Leary talking, close to his death, and he's talking about LSD.
Remember when people used to say that LSD is an escapist drug?
Yeah, I understand.
You know, one thing, LSD is dangerous because you can't escape.
Confrontation.
You got 100 billion neurons.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. And death, my thing about death is not escaping it. I'm running towards Miss Death. You can't turn this over to the doctors. You can't turn it over to the priests. You can't turn it over to the medical profession. Think for yourselves.
So that's a clip from Dying to Know, the documentary that we were talking about. And that is Ram Dass. And well, it's Timothy Leary talking to Ram Dass at, again, like we were talking about, the end of their lives, well, the end of Timothy Leary's life in the 90s, and talking about how he's going to deal with his own death and coming back to really the core of what he worked on throughout his life, which was telling people, look, you're kind of on your own, or at least you can't look to the systems of mm-hmm. of government and traditional religion to help you through this, you know, because they're going to control you. They're right.
Yeah. So take the psychedelic.
Take confront it. Yeah.
And then go from there. It's interesting also what kind of also plays on Terence McKenna and that Food mm-hmm. of the Gods thing. You know, he was also very much a proponent of taking the psychedelic, sitting with yourself, and also cultural revolution, you know, and he was able to see clearly and explain to me in his book Food of the Gods how many times the establishment tries to shut down this consciousness expanding mm-hmm. movement.
Yep.
And I think we are going to go into that a lot more next episode.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's, if you listen to the show, then you know that that's what we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Saying fuck the man. Push back in the system. Cool. Well, thank you, Rishi. It was great to see you. I'm glad that we did this.
Yeah, and I like our new setup.
Yeah, I like our new setup too. So we're currently, shout out to our friend Raheem. Raheem, you're
Raheem.
Awesome. I like Raheem. I did a podcast episode with Raheem actually on his show. But yeah, I'm staying at his house for the next couple of months. So we set up in his little living room here. I like it. What do you think? You like the digs?
Great.
All right, cool. So I'm going to do the outro and then we'll leave it there. So thank you for listening to What's What. And just a reminder that the Greener Us podcast will be changed to the What's What podcast. So we'll no longer be producing the Blend or Greener Us episodes. So if you're a fan, yeah, stay here with us. I'll also be doing some Bias Radio stuff, so you can still get indie music. And if you follow Greener Us on the social media channels, just know that we're changing everything to Bias Media. So you can continue to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Bias Media. And yeah, that's it. So we will see you for part 2 of Timothy Leary and Ram Dass.